If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
How do we free ourselves from patterns of unhealthy behavior? Why do we stay in relationships that make us miserable? Why do we make up stories and excuses about the root of our discontent, pretending that something other than the relationship is causing us to feel unhappy? Our guest today suggests that the price of staying in harmful relationships can be a hefty one, including our relationship with ourself. Isa Gucciardi tells us that each of us can learn to live our life with courage, acceptance, and joy instead of fear, anxiety, and self-doubt. She calls this taking radical self-responsibility for our well-being and the well-being of others. Today, we'll be exploring how to engage constructively with the inevitability of suffering with our guest, Isa Gucciardi. Dr. Isa Gucciardi developed depth hypnosis and the coming to peace process after years of academic training and in the field studying with shamanic and spiritual teachers. Her studies include linguistic anthropology, comparative religion, and transpersonal psychology, all of which forms the basis of her approach to healing and wholeness. She founded the Foundation of the Sacred Stream, a school for consciousness studies in Berkeley, California, to house the training programs. In addition to training hundreds of people to be spiritual counselors, she has taught thousands of students seeking personal growth in the foundation's other academic programs of applied shamanism, applied Buddhist psychology, integrated energy medicine, and empowered living. She's the author of Coming to Peace, Resolving Conflict Within Ourselves and with Others. Join us for the next hour as we explore how the processes of coming to peace can provide a pathway to reconciliation and wholeness with our guest, Dr. Isa Gucciardi. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Isa, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I would love for you to give us a little background on how you came to depth hypnosis. I know you had an ailment and a doctor asked you a question. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was raising two small children and running a business at the height of the dot-com in downtown San Francisco. And I was happy. You know, I thought everything was going great. And then I get these blood tests back and it's like, okay, you've got this autoimmune problem that's going to be with you the rest of your life. and here are the medications that you have to take. And I was like, I can't do this. This is not possible. There must be something else I can do. And that doctor, the question that he asked me as he was in the middle of explaining the whole thing to me, said, you know, some people who have this particular issue have suffered some kind of loss. Have you had some kind of a loss? And I was surprised coming out of his mouth, because he was a very traditional, empirical kind of guy, and that he would think that there would be anything related to emotional or mental issues with a physical problem. So I really paid attention when he asked. And so I really sat down and thought about it. And I thought, you know, I think I may have lost myself. You know, like I'm doing all this work for the company. I had a translation company and we were booming. And, you know, I was dedicated to being there for my kids at 3 o'clock, picking them up. So I was running the company and then picking my kids up and, you know, spending time with them until they went to bed, and then working all night, and then getting up with them in the morning and taking them to school, and then, you know, working while they were in school, you know. So I really didn't have any time for myself. And so I thought, I'm going to have to find out, you know, what have I lost? And that took me on a long journey. And really what I had lost was a lot of memory of my own conflict-laden childhood. You know, it was one of those things that I was trying to forget. And I got myself real busy making sure that I forgot. And when I started working with a hypnotherapist, I started realizing, you know, there's these parts of myself that have a voice and they want to be heard and I need to listen to them. And of course, I could only access those parts of myself in that altered state of consciousness that hypnosis produces, because it kind of disables the conscious mind's defenses and the conscious mind's effort to kind of keep things orderly. And so I had quite a path for myself and my own healing. I did heal myself from the autoimmune disease with hypnotherapy and by returning to my longstanding meditation practices and re-engaging with my shamanic practices. And I thought, you know, if this helped me, I want to help other people. So I sold my business and I went back to school. And I studied hypnotherapy and transpersonal psychology. And as I sat down with people to start doing hypnosis, the information about soul retrieval, power retrieval, came flooding in as I realized I can't just do a typical hypnotherapeutic script here. I have to generate the soul retrieval that's going to help this person deal with this issue. And then, you know, I started realizing, okay, well, this person who cannot rest, who's got a mind that's going crazy, needs meditation. So we need to bring in some meditative processes. And pretty soon, depth hypnosis was born. And I called it depth hypnosis because of the way that it helps you access the deepest parts of the self. And it ultimately combines shamanism and Buddhist principles with transpersonal psychology and hypnotherapy, particularly strong emphasis on regression work in depth hypnosis, where we're doing age regressions, past life regressions, prenatal regressions, because again, it's in these parts of the self that we often find the roots of symptoms that present themselves. So, you know, people come to hypnosis, for instance, with, you know, a desire to quit smoking or a desire to stop overeating or a desire to be able to present to a group of people without having a lot of fear, or maybe they have fear of flying. These are the reasons why people come to hypnosis for help. But the truth is that this symptom is the tip of the iceberg of a deeper issue, as it was with me. The autoimmune disease was the tip of the iceberg of a deeper process of internal forgetting that I had been engaged with. And the effects of that internal forgetting were that I actually was losing parts of myself, losing my ability to hold my physical structure in place. And by working with the emotional and mental physical and spiritual aspects and effects of that loss, I was able to correct the physical symptoms. And this is what we do all the time in depth hypnosis. I've done it with thousands and thousands of people by now. And it works in a very direct way with people, depending on what the person's symptom is. The symptom becomes the path to healing in depth hypnosis.
So in your case, it's your body lets you know that something was out of balance.
Right.
That it came in the form of an illness, of the autoimmune illness. Uh-huh. I would love for you to say something. I know your background, you've lived in... when you were younger, in many different places in the world. You started off in Hawaii and also Mexico and then Iran, I think.
Saudi Arabia and Lebanon.
So I would love for you to just give us a little taste of how those places in the world influenced you.
That's a great question, Justine. It's something that I've really tried to understand myself. And so thank you for asking that question. You know, I think that, you know, certainly Hawaii, with its incredible beauty and, you know, I had this amazing relationship with the nature there that was very, very informative to me as a young person and was really the basis of my opening in terms of shamanic understandings. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it certainly was. And the experience in Mexico really focused on my relationship with the Huichol Indians, who were the ranch hands at a ranch where I was left. I had a series of experiences of being parked by my family, you know. And so they would park me at this ranch, which was just about the best thing they could have done because these people were incredibly kind and really began to show me how being in nature and being among people could actually happen at the same time. Because up until that time, I had had this experience of there's peace in nature and there's conflict with humans, you know, and it's like, and my earliest question that I can remember is how do I bring the peace of nature into the world of humans?
And the Huichols had a rather cohesive community. They showed you a different way of being with people. Is that correct?
That's right, because they were very much aligned with the natural world. And so it was very instructive to me. And then when I moved to Saudi Arabia, I had an experience of a completely different experience of people being very much, you know, among the Bedouins. I did have this very wonderful experience of being able to be among the Bedouins because we lived out in the middle of the desert and I would sneak off and go hang out with the goats. And eventually the Bedouins would catch up with their goats and I could talk to them. It was very off the reservation kind of experience for a woman in Saudi Arabia at the time. I was a young teen. And the more typical experience was, you know, very stringent, strict rules about how you dress, where you go, how you act. And, you know, that was almost
repressive,
very repressive. And in the book, I describe the experience of being near the marketplace after the weekly executions. And the smell of blood after those executions was just so intense, you know, 110 degree heat and the smell of blood and knowing of all the suffering that had happened there. And I was like, what is going on with people? You know, like, what is the matter with human beings that they are doing this to each other? And it really, you know, ignited me to try to understand, you know, what is this world, you know, and what are the arbitrary rules that are keeping us from being able to be with ourselves in a natural way? And so, you know, I began studying, you know, cultural anthropology, trying to find a culture that really did reflect, like the Huichol culture, the peace of nature.
I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Isa Gucciardi. She is the author of Coming to Peace, Resolving Conflict Within Ourselves and with Others. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, sacredstream.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Isa Gucciardi, and she is the author of Coming to Peace, Resolving Conflict Within Ourselves and with Others. Isa, in that talking about depth hypnosis and your process Coming to Peace, one of the main ingredients in that has been the idea in the process of deep listening. I would love for you to talk about what your view of that kind of deep listening is.
Well, you know, one of the best examples we have of this is in the processes of the caucus of the Iroquois League that are described by Benjamin Franklin and other founders of the U.S. Constitution, writers of the U.S. Constitution, who actually drew upon the Iroquois Federation's way of creating harmony and involving different individual interests into a structure where the common good could be addressed as individual interests were addressed. In those caucuses, there was a process where you would have the members of the circle who were participating in the caucus who had some kind of a conflict. The Iroquois Federation was actually founded in order to resolve all of the problems that were coming out of the blood feuds among the different tribes. And so they were really trying to resolve this conflict. And one of the primary ways in which they did this was to give each member plenty of time to talk. So there would be a group of people in a circle that would have been prepared, specially cleared of any kind of extraneous energies or imprints, and prepared just to hold the conflict, the discussion about conflict. And everyone would be asked to connect with their own inner wisdom, to have mutual respect for others, to tell the truth as they knew it, to be able to maintain a personal responsibility about their actions in relationship to each other. And one of the ways that this was enforced was by a talking stick or a talking stone that was passed from person to person. And only the person who had the talking stick could speak. And that meant there was no interrupting, there was no over-talking, and this was absolutely radical for Europeans coming into contact with a governing body that was not screaming over each other, you know, trying to land punches, the whole kinds of things that was going on in the British Parliament.
If you look at pictures of Parliament, even today, you see people just screaming at each other across the aisle to each other. I mean, it's still kind of shocking to see how they're yelling at each other right, in the way that they are.
And that sort of thing would not be tolerated. If someone were to do that sort of thing in one of these caucuses, they would be asked to take a moment of silence. And then when they could return and speak with respect, that they could return. And, you know, it was interesting because this process that I just described is also a process that you find in the Pacific. And in Hawaii, it's called Ho'oponopono. And these are the processes whereby, you know, if there's someone has an illness or if there's some kind of conflict within the society, one of the shamans or the kahunas calls a caucus, a circle of people, and everyone speaks deeply and listens deeply to one another about any kinds of hidden issues that might be contributing to the conflict or the illness. And often the kahuna will not heal until the ho'oponopono has taken place, until the exposure of all the truth and the understanding of mutual responsibility has been laid bare through these circles.
You know, Isa, one of the things that you just said is, as an aspect of this, is telling the truth. Mm-hmm. Now, those are telling the truth. I mean, that may seem easy to tell the truth, but this is a big process and one that is difficult. It's not. It's complex. It's not easy for us to tell the truth to one another. And so you're talking about telling the truth, number one, in a self-container, but we're not used to telling the truth, are we?
Right. And we're not used to listening. We're not used to saying it, and we're not used to hearing it. And the really wonderful thing about the coming to peace process is that it creates a container for the truth to be held and told and known. And, you know, coming to peace processes are always taking place in the midst of conflict. And what I always say about conflict is that you can find peace in the heart of conflict. Conflict will lead you to peace if you allow it to teach you. And the way that you allow it to teach you is by listening to all the different aspects of the conflict and by taking responsibility and telling the truth about your own activity and creating the conflict and being able to listen to another person's truth about their responsibility in creating the conflict. And one of the things that happens is that as everyone tells the truth, as everyone tries to connect with their deepest inner wisdom in speaking, is that people realize this person has the same goal that I have. They want to be happy. They want to be free. And the question then becomes, how do we help each other both meet our own happiness and create our own happiness as we help the other person create their own happiness? And this becomes the subject of the process as the conflict is, the roots of the conflict are exposed with the truth telling. And I have seen it hundreds and hundreds of times. Coming to peace is the conflict resolution process for families and couples and communities within the depth hypnosis process. So I work with it every day.
So Isa, you know, you talk about like conflict as a gateway for healing. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about like working with a family. So, and you give several wonderful examples in your book about actual conversations that have that take place. What do you do? The first question that I had before I got into this part of the book, the first question I had was, okay, so I'm in a family that's in conflict and a lot of anger is flashing around and I have judgments about all of this. And so I want to do this process. What do we do when not everyone wants to participate?
Well, of course, you can't force everyone to participate, but the fact that they're not participating becomes an issue, right? That's the truth. That becomes the truth, that they are not willing to participate. And it's true that sometimes people don't want to participate because the coming to peace process is interrupting to power hierarchies that exist within families and communities. And so the people in power, who are the ones that are often dictating the imbalance, don't want to be challenged. So if they don't want to be challenged, then they are excluded from the process by their own hand. And then what happens is everyone else comes up with a way of working with this person who's not participating, and they come to an agreement about the best way to interface with this person that is based on mutual respect, that's based on honesty, truth-telling. And the person's negative behavior has less traction in that case, and people have a different way of orienting themselves
to that. So there's an acceptance of it rather than resisting it, saying, oh, we must bring them to the table and they must mm-hmm. participate in the same way the rest of us. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a wonderful example that you give. There was a family that you describe where there was a stepfather and a mother and three daughters, and the oldest daughter, a teenage daughter, was really having trouble with the stepfather. They were disrupting the entire family with their aggravation with one another. And so there was a moment, and he wasn't really participating so much in the process, but there was a moment that he asked the question of the daughter. He said, well, what makes you think I'm such a jerk? And I just thought, oh, that's it. And then you talked about how the facilitator then just went in with that question, because in some ways, that was an opening question. That was a sincere question. He finally asked an authentic question with some slight degree of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And so what would you say about that, how that process then unfolded?
Well, I mean, you're right to name that as the turning point, because then the girl could really tell her truth, you know, that he had been overbearing and that he was being controlling. And then he could tell his truth, that the reason that he was being overbearing and controlling was because he was trying to make sure that everything would be okay for her, because her father wasn't showing up and he knew how hurt she was by her father not being there. So he wanted to make everything perfect, so that she wouldn't feel the loss of her father. And there was other children there at the coming to peace process. And one of them, the youngest, wisely said, you know, there's nothing that you can do to make up for our father not showing up. And that was a big revelation for him. Like, that was a truth that he had not wanted to hear, because he had wanted to believe that he could make it better for them. And when the one who was having the horrible fights with him realized that he was trying to actually make things better, and that he was upset with the father for not showing up, and that she was upset with the father for not showing up, then they realized that they were taking out their anger at the biological father on each other. And they realized that they were both hurting and that he was trying to come up with a solution. Then there was this huge reconciliation and a lot of apologies and, you know, a lot of determination to create, you know, that he was going to work on his own internal process to try to understand why he was so driven to try to make things better for them.
So, Isa, when this happens, it's often a surprise,
right,
isn't it? It kind of then goes, boom, down into this other level. And you can feel it when you're doing this work. I mean, I've spoken to you about the deep circle work that I've done for many decades now. And you just feel it when there is this breakthrough. And it's not that we have to do anything. We're not trying to fix a problem. But you feel a kind of enlightenment that happens. A light bulb goes off in people, and they go, oh, that's what it's about. It wasn't about what we thought it was about.
Right.
It's this other issue that is deeper, and it's just a marvelous moment when that happens.
It's so poignant, right? It's so poignant. And, you know, it's funny. That session happened, you know, many years ago. And every time I touch it, I come to tears. You know, it's...
Oh, it's so wonderful. Yeah.
That moment.
I can understand.
Yeah.
I'm here with Isa Gucciardi, and she's the author of Coming to Peace, Resolving Conflict Within Ourselves and with Others. And also she does a process called deep hypnosis. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, sacredstream.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts.